Hey, welcome in to the Friday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game, sponsored by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Nick Keiser here with you on this Friday morning. I have returned from the precipice of death, and I'm back at it this morning. Joe Rex Road, thank you for holding down the fort the last couple of days with Kuharsky.
Yeah, it was a blast. How are you feeling now? Are you well off the edge? Are you still? It's a great way to come back. I have a nice, Preds West Coast game, a little post game of an 11 goal game, right?
I got to tell you, I thought I was well off the edge, and then I got about 3 hours of sleep last night. Not feeling so hot this morning, but we'll see how it goes throughout the show here today. But great
Wonderful.
Decision by me to come back and just worked the latest game of the year that also took forever because there was a billion goals, three fights, and a couple stoppages and all these things. It was nice.
Yeah. I wasn't going to tell you that you should just be sick one more night, but hey, at least today's Friday, man.
Yes, no doubt about that. Keiser, how are we doing? What's going on?
Hey, good morning. You kind of just disappeared on me Tuesday. I didn't even know what was going on with you, man. Glad you're okay.
Well, the Predators were making a great comeback, and I was doing the complete opposite downstairs at Bridgestone Arena.
Very true.
I'll leave it at that.
Man, that's tough. So did this, like, rip through the whole house then?
Well, I believe the child is the culprit. So she's been dealing with some stomach stuff. She's fine and was much better off than I was throughout this whole process. So far, the wife has avoided it, so hoping that that continues to be the case.
I'm knocking on wood.
But, this is another example of these kids and daycare and school and all this stuff. It'll just rip you. Just rip you right out from underneath.
Yeah, it sucks for us. But, you know what? It's good for the kids. Get those immune systems built up, man. Build up those immune systems.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what that looks like. We'll see how things are kind of heading off here for the rest of the show here today. The Predators did win last night. They win 6-5. So first off, who knew games between the Predators and the San Jose Sharks apparently going to be unbelievably entertaining throughout the course of a year. So that's been the case so far this week. Preds were up 3-0 last night, and then were up 5-2 last night. It was 5-5 after two periods, and Fedor Svechkov scores the game winner in the third. Which means, Joe, the Predators have won 5 games in a row, which is a season high. Philip Forsberg has scored again. He scored twice last night. So that's a 7-game goal streak for him, which ties his own franchise record. Stamkos scored last night, so shout out to Paul Kuharsky for getting me on the board again in Preds Pick to Click. Mm-hmm. Kuharsky's unbelievable at this game, apparently.
He is.
All things are coming up pretty well in Predator land right now. Another win for them. They're going for 6 in a row on Saturday night in Anaheim.
Yeah, it's interesting. At the start of the week, we were like, okay, this is real opportunity. And then, they're probably going to screw it up. And then they totally did. But they have won these two games. So I think once you get to 5, sometimes that definitely you can gather momentum, teams go on streaks like in this league a lot. And we, of course, the Preds had one last year that was insane. But for as shaky in some ways as they've been, still 5 in a row, sometimes you can start to really believe that you're going to find a way to win these games night after night.
Yeah, and they, look, last night was weird because, first off, UC Saros did not start last night. Eustace Onnen does. So Saros gets pulled after the first period Tuesday night. Onnen comes in, gets the win. Onnen starts again last night. I'm not going to sit here and say that he played great because he didn't. He gave up 5 goals. He did have a stretch in the third period where he made about 5 saves in a row, which were just unbelievable, which kept them ahead in that game. So a big moment for him in the game last night, which gets to a Saros conversation that I'll bring up here in a second. But in the meantime, you've got Stamkos, Marchessault, and Forsberg just continuing to kind of put the team on their back. Like Forsberg's got a 9-game point streak, 7-game goal streak. Marchessault's got a 10-game point streak. Stamkos finds the back of the net again last night on the power play. And, Joe, it kind of feels like ever since they made that switch, they've started to play a lot better. Like Vengen threw out some numbers the other day on Preds Insiders. Since December 12th, they're top five in the league in offensive categories, mostly anything you want to look at, whether that's goals per game or expected goals per game. Since January 1st, they're number one in the league. Alex Doherty's thrown that out there. So they look a lot more like the offensive team that we thought they might look like heading into the year. I mean, I guess the question is going to be, is it too little too late at this point? But you win last night, you get to five games in a row that you've won. You know, Calgary won last night, so you're still 10 points back of a playoff spot. But Vancouver lost. Like, it's going to be kind of an interesting race here for that last wild card spot. Whether the Predators end up being involved with it or not, it's still going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and look, if this is what they're going to be, and I don't think there's any question that that switch has, you know, has been the key, you know, thing that flipped things. But if this is what they're going to be, I mean, they're going to win probably more than they lose, and they're going to be fun to watch the rest of the year, which I know is of little consolation if they don't get into the tournament. But it is, again, we are talking about this year and next year now too, right? And we're talking about, you know, are you going to be in a situation at the end of the year where it's like, holy crap, you know, what do you do with this? Or are you going to be in a situation where you're like, well, okay, now you can see it. Now some things have been figured out, and now you have to figure, you know, you certainly have to still adjust some things, whatever you can adjust around the edges, and maybe really feel like you can figure it out next year. Again, if you can just not be a walking zombie for the first 6 weeks of the season. But that's still, that's a big deal to me, even if they don't make the tournament, to play like this and be what we thought they would be offensively.
Yeah, I think so too. And look, I think that, you know, we'll, I think Forsberg in particular is on a heck of a heater right now. Now, that's gonna come to an end at some point. Like, he's not gonna score every game the rest of the year here. I guess my question is, like, when he dries up with the goal scoring, and look, he doesn't have to dry up for 10 games or 18 games, but when he's not scoring every game, can they keep this going? Like, does Marchessault kind of fill the void when he's not? Like, does O'Reilly step up and score? Because that's what it's going to take, I think. Like, they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to go on a big run here to get themselves back in playoff consideration. So offensively, I think there's a lot to be encouraged about right now. Like, look, Svechkov's playing really well lately. Svechkov, you know, with a goal and assist last night, I think you're feeling pretty good about the way that he's played. A question that I would have, Joe, has nothing to do with offense. Like, is it time to start having a conversation about UC Saros? And last night's game, or excuse me, Tuesday night's game was not very good from him. And you just look at the numbers overall. You know, last year he got off to a horrible start and then started to figure it out in the second half of the year, much like the rest of the team, and played better, looked more like UC Saros. But at the end of the season, he ends up with a .906 save percentage, .286 goals against, and I think he saved, according to Hockey Reference. Now, these numbers are different depending on which sites you look at, but according to Hockey Reference, he had like a 5.3 goal saved above expected, right? The year before that, he was at 30. That's a
Right.
pretty dramatic difference. So far this year, he's a .901 save percentage, which would be in games where he's like started, you know, a considerable amount of games in a season, a career low. He's at a .281 goals against average. And his goal saved above expected right now is negative 0.3. Like, you're talking about a guy that's got an 8-year contract that's about to kick in. And the numbers at the moment, we'll see if he can turn around, but the numbers at the moment would tell you that he is pretty clearly trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit alarming. I saw Nick Kieser put on the internet something about a goalie controversy yesterday. So, which I think, you know, I mean, I don't think we're there right now, but it's interesting that the not starting it last night is interesting too. Is that like not wanting the comparison to be made with a Askarov in the other net or something like that? I mean, or just like he just needs to. He just needs to reset and take a little extended break here. I don't know. But it's alarming, man. I mean, in last year when we were going through the whole thing with Saros and Askarov and all that, and again, I mean, it's not like right now Askarov is setting the world on fire by any means, okay? But he's very young too. But talking about Saros's game, the need for someone with his game, with his size, to be super explosive. Maybe you tail off a little earlier if that style of goalie, than others. I don't know if that's what's happening or not, but I think that they really need him to go on a heater and kind of calm those fears a little bit. And again, they're not gonna sniff anything if he doesn't.
Right. Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcoming Cam to the program. Cam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
No, good morning, fellas. So, number one, super proud of the Preds and the way that they've kind of brought themselves back in the last couple games. That's never going to hear me knock that. And the third goal with Forsberg last night, where he literally deflected it backwards. I don't know if anybody saw that, but he deflected
Oh,
it
yeah.
up underneath his legs. And one question that I have is, does that goal go to him because he deflected it, or does that
Yes.
go, you know what I'm saying?
No, it goes to him.
And
It's the
then,
last offensive player to touch the puck.
okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. And literally, if you watch it, he was skating the opposite way and deflected it up underneath his legs, and that's insane. But it's Forsberg. The biggest question I have is, does it not seem like a contract season? Like the same thing that we did last year, like NFL players, Chris Johnson, it's contract season. We run for 2,000 yards and then they get the big contract and it's okay. Now we're at the end of the season. We're getting towards the end of the season. And now everybody's playing at a high level. Nobody wants to get cut. Nobody wants to get tossed. But we did the same thing last year, did we not?
Yep, absolutely. It's a good point. Thanks for the call, Cam. Well, we talked about this earlier this week, Joe. Let's see how this finishes here. Let's see if they can legitimately get themselves back into contention. Regardless, next season, they got to find a way to get off to a better start. I mean, they were, awful to start the season last year in terms of the results. I actually thought they played okay, but they just weren't getting any goaltending to begin the season last year, and they eventually got goaltending and figured it out. This year it was a whole myriad of things, but they dug themselves in a massive hole that I still think is going to be really hard to dig themselves out of. They got to figure out the starts to the year moving forward if it's going to be Andrew Brunette.
Without question. Now, Saros, that's been pretty consistent. Maybe you don't figure that out, but you expect him to eventually even out. You mentioned he was goal saved above expected. You said he was like around 30 last year, right?
He was around 30 the year before. Last year, he was around 5.
That's right. That makes sense because last year he was actually way on the wrong side of that for the first 2 months, if I recall correctly. And yeah, really, I mean, his numbers were tremendous. During their streak, and again, it was like, okay, well, there's the real UC Saros. I mean, that's a big part of, I think, the decision, right? So he may never figure out like fast starts. And you know what? If you end up coming out with close to a 915 every year and stuff like that, then okay, fine. The team needs to. But like you said, right now he's gonna have to really turn things around to not have his worst season.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll get into the Titans' journey for the next quarterback coming up next. How is Mike Borgonzi going to approach this? We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Driven by Wilson County Hyundai.
615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, a lot of discussion about Mike Borgonzi the last couple of days and what the power structure is going to look like, what the format of the Titans front office is going to look like. And now we can start to get to what I think matters moving forward here, at least in the immediate. And that is, what is the quarterback situation going to look like and how the Titans figure out an answer at quarterback? So let's just start there. They came out with a piece on TennesseeTitans.com yesterday morning, kind of detailing Mike Borgonzi, his thoughts on quarterback and how they're going to turn over every stone to pursue quarterback, and their goal is to find the next franchise quarterback. And Will Levis is here, and he was drafted a couple years ago, and he's going to be given, every opportunity to play and compete. But finding the next quarterback is the goal and the next mandate for this franchise this offseason. it's an interesting read here on TennesseeTitans.com as it relates to Borgonzi. And obviously, you know, the process of identifying Mahomes comes up and Alex Smith and kind of solidifying the quarterback position on that front. And then leading into Mahomes was how things were done in Kansas City. So as you kind of sort through all of this and based on some of the comments that Borgonzi's had over the last couple of days here, Joe, including on DVD yesterday with D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, what do you make of kind of the task now in front of Borgonzi and Chad Brinker in this front office here to find the next quarterback and some of the comments that have been made? You know, Stilley was talking yesterday about he's talking about solidifying the quarterback position, and then made the kind of connection of the Alex Smith, Sam Darnold comparison that the Titans could pursue this offseason. What do you make of where things currently stand with Mike Borgonzi and his approach to quarterback?
Yeah, well, first of all, the existence of that article, I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, not that anyone should be surprised, but as I read through it, I saw a passing reference to Will Levis. And it's like, well, in case you were wondering, when the official Titans site is essentially dismissing Will Levis as quarterback, you know, I mean, you can, of course, and of course, they said what you would think they would say. Yeah, Will Levis, you know, he's under, I think that's how Wyatt wrote it, right? He's under contract.
Right.
So there's him. He's also a person. But, yeah, I don't know if, you know, I don't know if I'm 100% in belief that he absolutely won't be here. You've made the case for why he shouldn't be, and I think it's sound reasoning. And usually when stuff like this goes on with a young QB and it's pretty clear that everybody's moving on, seems like the team usually decides it's just better off to just go ahead and wipe the slate clean. So that's probably what's going to happen. But yeah, there's obviously we're going to, you know, we may have our answer obviously way before the draft. Right. And I do think that that's a real possibility, but also already where there's so much, parsing of words and trying to read into things. And I'm not sure they've said anything right now that really tells you what they're going to do. You know, I think you could probably talk yourself into a lot of things. Like Adam Schefter pulled out a quote from the Brinker session that he wasn't even at and, you know, turned it into an internet sensation with, you know, the generational talent quote that Brinker said, which again, I mean, you could, and I heard him talking about it too, saying, you know, this means that they aren't for sure taking a quarterback. But I'm like, well, I would have told you before any of this, before you co-opted a quote that you weren't there to get, that they aren't for sure taking a quarterback, right?
I mean,
look, is it impossible for the Titans to think that Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders or freaking Jalen Milroe or whatever is a generational talent? I mean, it's no. Why did the Broncos think Bo Nix was a first round pick last year? We all laughed at them, right? So I'd be hesitant to read too much into any of that stuff. I also, Robbie, I would like, you know, we have the quarterback discussion, but the big picture, we have not gotten your take. You know, I mean, the last couple of days have been me and Kaharski going, meh, 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 old man yapping at each other, but I'd like to get your overall, you know, assessment of Borgonzi, the Borgonzi scheme.
Well, I mean, look, it was a press conference, so there's only so much reaction that I've got to it. I'll just put it to you this way. I mean, there was a lot of talk about final say, as we knew there would be. And the Titans are doing their darndest to make it look like, you know, Mike Borgonzi has free reign to make the picks and to do all these things, and he's got final say over, like, free agent decisions and all these things, which is great in principle. They seem to, like, just shake their head and be, like, staring into the crowd at the idea of, like, well, all that's great. So what happens if, like, Chad Brinker likes somebody and you don't like somebody? Like, what happens then? And I think we know what the answer to that is. But, like, their ability to just not really acknowledge that possibility to me was pretty funny. So, again, like it, you know, at the end of the day, how much is it really going to matter? Like, how much are they going to disagree? I have no idea. But, like, this the final say conversation, I don't know that there's any more – clarity is probably not the right word. I just don't know that they were willing to totally address it the way that I think people thought that they should have in that press conference.
No, they didn't. But I will say that I do feel a little differently about the whole thing than I did going in. Obviously I've been calling this job the assistant to the regional manager, and basically that makes Borgonzi Dwight Schrute and Chad Brinker Michael Scott. I would say that, like, I just think whatever they do, good, bad, medium, it's both of them to me, you know? So, like, which is fine, whatever. I mean, to me, they're tied together, you know, and that's how it should be. That's how it should be evaluated. I mean, Brinker was asked in that session about how he seems to have cocooned himself, as we've talked about. He seems to be the safest guy in the whole bunch, and he disagreed and said, "I actually think I'm the most out front." Well, we all don't know what Amy thinks, right, on that, right? Like, there's just no – but to me, they're tied together, you know, and Brinker's been here 2 years already, but apparently, you know, at least they're publicly calling for all this patience. And, you know, I mean, I get what they're saying. I think the final say stuff is largely a media, you know, like we think that they're all screaming at each other on draft night, like, "It's my call, you sit down right now," you know, and it's obviously not like that. They have months to try to work through that and come up with a strategy that they collaborate on, right?
I think they used that word once, didn't they?
I think a couple. I think collaborative.
Yes,
was thrown in there. But hey, look, that's what it is. You know, I mean, as much as it nauseates to hear the word again. So, I don't care. Like, was it Brinker or was it Borgonzi who decided, you know, that they were going to wait for Carson Beck next year or whatever, you know, I mean, like, it's them together. So we'll see if they can pick some good football players. It'd be great to have some football players to talk about.
It would be awesome to have some football players to talk about. My biggest takeaway for the entire press conference, Joe, was that who wasn't there, and that was the owner. I was like, oh, okay, of course. Why would she be?
Did you hear Stilly carrying water for her on that?
I did not.
Oh, my. Well, that's why I won Jared versus Joe, because Caroline wasn't there to give her buddy another win, but also because Vingan was like, I can't. I mean, like, Stilly's like, oh, it means nothing at all. I'm like, you can't be serious. We asked Charles Robinson yesterday. He's like, he couldn't come up with another example of an owner at a hire of a GM or a coach not even being there. Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Never heard of it before.
It's pretty wild. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. More on the quarterback discussion coming up next, including maybe a style of quarterback that Mike Borgonzi doesn't have time for. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Own the $99 yearly Beehive membership with the buzz. Is always about great service. We'll have Jared Stillman with us coming up at 7 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans as well. Right now, taking yours, 615-737-1025. Joe, going back to this piece at TennesseeTitans.com that Borgonzi kind of highlighted the journey that they're about to embark on to take on the next quarterback position. It was interesting to hear some of the descriptions that he brought up. Quote, well, you have to have the physical arm talent, obviously, to make every throw in the league. Accuracy, decision-making are big parts of it. The way you process coverages, the game's changed a little bit too. So having mobility, not just a pocket passer. And, of course, the leadership part is a big part of that as well. You know, he went on to, you know, talk about kind of the leadership part of it and the face of the franchise and all that stuff, but did bring up, you know, having mobility and not just being a pocket passer. Is that any sort of hint to you a way that they could be leaning at quarterback, or at least some guys that maybe they won't be considering at the quarterback position?
Well, you could look, I mean, if you want to, you could read into that and say, okay, well, Shedeur Sanders is out if you want. I mean, he moves okay. Can move around and make throws, but he's not a runner. You could disqualify Kirk Cousins for sure if you'd like to off that comment. I mean, of all the possibilities for them, the only like absolute statue. I just look. That's what the quarterback position is now, right? I mean, more and more, and there's quarterbacks who can maneuver in the pocket, but are really pocket passers, right? Which I consider Shedeur Sanders. And then there are actual quarterbacks that you can actually do something with their running ability. And there's a lot of, I mean, look, Will Levis is one of those guys. Titans didn't do a lot with it, but here and there you see, last year, a little read option, a little bit of QB power or whatever. I mean, a little bit of design stuff. He's good enough runner to do it. I mean, but even Rodgers, I think, although it's way less now, I mean, obviously when he was in Green Bay, he was terrific at one, extending plays, but also he could rip off a 15-yarder for you, no problem. I mean, he's still a lot more mobile than Cousins, I would say. So if you want to read too into it, I guess you could look at that and say, well, they probably don't have interest in a guy like a Cousins, like a Goff, like those absolute, like you, if you don't give them clean pockets, they probably aren't going to figure it out. But there aren't that many, they just aren't that many quarterbacks like that anymore.
Well, I guess what does having mobility mean to them? I guess would be my question, right? Because, like, look, I don't think people watch Joe Burrow play and they think of, like, oh, he's some mad scrambler out there, because he's not. But he's got mobility, right?
Yeah.
Like, Joe Burrow can
He's
get
good.
himself out of
Yeah.
trouble, he can maneuver the pocket. Nobody's going to confuse Joe Burrow and Josh Allen in terms of their mobility. But he's got it. So I guess to what degree is the mobility important? Because I'm with you, like, that's becoming more and more a part of how you play quarterback in this league, right? Like, the days of you just being able to sit there as a statue, unless you have incredible conditions around you on the offensive line and at skill positions, it's just harder to do that in today's NFL. And you just don't see as many quarterbacks that are completely pocket passers. So how important is the mobility to them? Like, do you have to have, like, are you wanting your quarterback to be, in the mold of Lamar Jackson, where you can build a running game around them? Or is it just simply, hey, have enough mobility to get yourself out of trouble when the situation arises? To me, those are two pretty different things.
Yeah, for sure. At least, but and then there's just again, it's just a small group where it's like you don't check any of those boxes. And Cousins is one of them, especially after the Achilles. And as we've talked about with Tom Brady, who is certainly I'd say one of the top 10 quarterbacks, maybe even top five quarterbacks of all time. He's not fast, not mobile, but great sense. I mean, I think the eyes in the back of the head thing might be as much a asset as what, however you move, because it helps you move to the right spot, and then you extend plays. So yeah, I if we're talking about Borgonzi, well, his experience is with a guy who, because I remember how long ago was that? Well, 5 years ago, about exactly 5 years ago, watching him, make the Tennessee Titans look like the, Keystone Cops on one particular play and totally change an AFC Championship game. He's not, but and he's a good runner, but he's not a build a running game around it runner.
No.
He's just an incredible, he just has an incredible knack for breaking the pocket and extending plays, extending drives, and also for slowing down on the sideline and seeing if you'll get a cheap shot on him and get 15 yards.
There's that.
But if you're Bergonzi, you come from that. From that's what you want, right? You want that guy, even if he's not the great runner that Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson are, but like he's the complete package, which is what he talked about the other day.
Yeah, like,
So
I
just
want
go
the
get him.
complete pack. Yeah, like, go find Patrick Mahomes. How hard could that be? Like, I want the complete package. Like, I would love for my quarterback to be able to pull the ball down and pick up 15 yards whenever you need it. I still, though, like, Joe, if I had to settle for it, I think more importantly than that is I want the quarterback that can extend plays, keep his eyes downfield, buy a little bit more time, and deliver the football. Like, that to me is a big part of how you have to play the quarterback position in today's game. And yeah, like, it's great. Like, I love watching Lamar Jackson, who, by the way, does that. Like, he extends plays and he doesn't just take off running. He keeps his eyes down the field and he throws the ball. Josh Allen does the same thing. So yes, I would love to have the complete package. But if you're asking me, like, mobility-wise, what's more important, the quarterback's ability to run or their ability to get out of trouble and extend plays in the passing game, I'll take the extending plays in the passing game every time.
For sure. And then speaking of 5 years ago, a week before Patrick Mahomes did that to to the Titans. You know, Lamar Jackson's out there, and he was not that at that point. He really wasn't, you know. Yeah. He was a much more predictable player, and they were much more dependent on him as a runner, and there was limitations of passing him that aren't there anymore. Again, go back to Josh Allen early on in his career. I thought he was going to be awful. I was like, this is a disastrous pick. So that's a different discussion on patience that doesn't really exist much today, except in your organization that you cheer for. But yeah, those guys have turned into that, where it's still the first thing is still extending plays to go downfield. And then if need be, of course, you can kill people with your legs too. I mean, if the Titans can just get someone again with sense in the pocket, because I think with like Cousins and Goff, two guys I just keep picking on here, I also think that they're not great in that way. You know, I don't think they're great. Like if you compare them, they're about as athletic and mobile as Brady, but like he was much better than those two guys are at sensing it and extending. Yep. So there's a lot. It's many shades of gray.
So, I mean, look, you could, if you really wanted to, you could take this as confirmation that your boy, Kirk Cousins, could be out of consideration. I feel like that'd be a really sad day if we get to this point already on January 24th.
I'd love to see Captain Kirk in Nashville, but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, is Darnold the best possibility, and is he, you know, is he the best option? Is it realistic? Is there any possibility of a Darnold? Because if so, I'd probably put him at the top of the list.
I probably would too. I just, what's it going to take to get him? Because I still, like, I would be stunned if Minnesota lets him get to free agency. If they don't at least
tag him and trade him. Yeah.
And then trade him. So are you going to give up what it would take in a trade to go get him at this point? Like, I realize it's quarterback. So it's a different discussion than going to get even like a Legarius Sneed. It's different. But still, like, you're not really in a spot where you need to be giving up more assets if you're the Titans.
Well, right. One of the biggest things I took away from the presser was this pretty lofty, you know, 30 picks, 12 in the top 100 the next 3 years. You're not getting those by trading for Sam Darnold. You're probably not getting those if you don't trade away number one.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to pull off. So I just, the Sam Darnold path continues to be pretty unlikely to me. That's just kind of the way I view it. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Why Joe Rexroad thinks that one approach to the Titans would be a terrible idea this offseason. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll have Jared Stillman with us on the program coming up at 7 o'clock. Let's head to our 1025 The Game phone line and welcome in Chad in Hendersonville to the program. Chad, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, y'all. I enjoy your show a little bit more than the one that happens in the afternoon with Jared, where if you disagree with him, he comes over. Every time I call that guy, it turns into a large argument. But anyways, moving on. You're talking about Sam Darnold. I'm curious why you think that's unlikely, because to me, I would think that would push towards potential likely, because, you know, I've studied this guy's play. Big Viking fan, big quarterback fan of the position I played at the college level. He just seems to have everything. I mean, the guy's 6'4". The size, he stands in there. Now, if you go back and eliminate the last two games, you know, you're talking about a guy that's probably, I can't even put a number on his number as far as financially and what he's worth. But, you know, that last couple games, their offensive line was depleted. And Sam, if he was guilty for anything, he was holding the ball too long. But some of that stuff, I think, can still be adjusted. So curious why you think that's unlikely, part A. And part B, Travis Hunter, I just don't see – I love his game. As far as his NFL game, I think that has to be the traditional cornerback that gets fed a little bit of wide receiver sprinkled in there, correct? I mean, you don't hide – that guy's not going to play wide receiver one with the first pick for NFL franchise. Your thoughts?
Yep, thanks for the call, Chad. Well, I think it's unlikely because, number one, I think there's still a good chance that he starts for Minnesota next year. Like,
yeah. It's the Vikings keeping him makes it unlikely.
The Vikings keeping him, or at least franchise tagging him, makes it pretty unlikely to me that that happens. And then if they don't, let's say he gets the free agency. Well, he's got to choose you. So there's also that as well. Like the odds would not be high that Sam Darnold is the quarterback here next year. And I'm basing that mostly on the fact that I think Minnesota is going to find a way to keep him. And even if they ended up trying to trade him, which I don't think they would, at least to start with, like I think they probably like the idea of, for next year at least, having the quarterback room of Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy. And look, maybe there comes a point next year, early in the year, where they feel like they need to turn things over to McCarthy. I don't know. Like, maybe you can make a decision on Darnold via trade at that point. But I understand the last two games were very bad from him. I still would be surprised if he just made it to free agency. Like, I don't think that would be very smart from Minnesota.
No, it would not be. Tag him, and I agree. I think keep him for another year. I mean, they went 14-3. They won a lot of close games. There's probably some regression coming next year. But as far as you want to take the other side on Darnold, Kevin O'Connell, NFL Coach of the Year for a reason. Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison. I mean, he had a heck of a team around him. Yes, his offensive line got more banged up. Those last two games were pretty rough, man. They were pretty rough on the Darnold front. Not enough to me for the Vikings to be like, yeah, let's go to basically the rookie coming off an ACL. I don't think that you mess with 14-3. But I think there's still cause for, caution when it comes to Darnold being, like a top QB in the league. But he's certainly the top potential option out there at this point, I would say.
Joe, there is a potential
Travis
path.
Hunter question, too, we forgot to deal with. But
well,
I agree that he should be a corner. A lot of people think the other way around, though, that he should be a receiver.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that I'm not at least putting him at receiver part of the time if I'm drafting him. If I'm the one in charge, he's going to play at least a little bit of receiver. Like, I think you got to take advantage of that talent. And, look, there's risk to that. We've talked about that, but – I think you should play at least a little bit of receiver if you're going to draft him. And then if it doesn't work, like if you get, a year into it, 2 years into it, and you feel like you need to pick a position, then you pick a position at that point. But I would at least approach it with the idea of him at least sporadically playing both if I were the one making the decision on Travis Hunter. Joe, there is an approach that you would not be excited for the Titans to take this offseason as it relates to free agency. What is said approach, and why do you think it would be a terrible idea?
Well, this is going off a Glennon tweet from yesterday of a story that he wrote, and it was basically, I have to paraphrase, I should have found it, but Glennon tweets a lot, man. I mean, he's tweeting out PFF grades, and it's not even the season anymore. He's tweeting out PFF offseason grades. Borgonzi got a 73.8 for his presser the other day, which I thought was pretty good from PFF.
It's impressive.
But basically the idea of, well, the Titans spent a lot of money in free agency last year. Don't expect that this time around. Discipline was a word they used the other day. And that's all fine. I'm certainly not suggesting that they should go on a spree. But they are not fixing it. And I understand also that they're not trying, they're not fixing everything in 1 year. That's fine, too. You have no chance of being competitive if you don't get a lot of guys in free agency. And I just, as I read this, it was kind of like, yeah, draft and develop. Well, yeah, but every team in this league, go to any team you want. Go to the top teams, the teams that were the top in the league this year, the teams that are still playing. Free agency was a critical, key, big part of what they did. Yes, they also, for the most part, are teams that were built through the draft. And the Titans have to be great in the draft this year and next year, and they have to hope that some of the stuff we're not sure about yet of the last two drafts breaks their way. But like, they have to go out and get a bunch. They have to, you aren't fixing everything in the draft. And again, fixing to the extent of not being at the bottom of the league next year. So I just think it's a little bit of a misconception here. Discipline is fine. So discipline, not giving up a lot of. So if I would look back at last offseason, it would not be free agency. It would be the Snead trade, where I would say there was maybe where discipline could have been utilized and was not. Yeah. They have free agency is huge for this team. And it may be the quarterback, by the way. So start right there. We'll see. But even if it's not, they've got to, you got to have a draft strategy. Maybe you get extra picks because you're trading out of one, but you have to do a ton in free agency. So that's where I just read that. And I'm like, is that what the narrative is going to be now, that this is going to be that screw that free agency stuff. It's draft. No, you got to do both. Every team in this league, with any, I mean, look, like the Ravens, and I know they're not playing anymore, but I would say that was a pretty good free agency signing of Derrick Henry last year that made them a better team. I mean, Titans are going to have to do a lot there.
Saquon Barkley's worked out okay.
Yeah, it's decent. Kind of important.
Yeah, like
running backs, baby.
A lot of it is, well, I mean, look, even for the Titans, like Tony Pollard, pretty good free agent signing. Like, I know you lost Derrick Henry, but Tony Pollard came
best
in.
One.
Tony Pollard was best not signing. Your problem this year in terms of what happened with the Titans out there. So, like, you still have to supplement your roster. Like, look, we all would agree a lot of this roster needs to be turned over. Well, part of turning over the roster is supplementing it in free agency, right? Like, you've got to add pieces. You just got to be smarter with the pieces that you add. Like, that's part of it. You got to make better decisions in free agency. And look, I will say, like, when you're a bad team, you probably have to overpay in free agency. But that's a price that I think you have to be willing to pay if you're going to turn this thing around quickly.
Yeah. And also you need like people like DeAndre Hopkins who love country music, and you get a bump. There is a Nashville bump. I mean, Bergonzi the other day is going through all the stuff, you know, the reasons that I like this. Yeah. Well, ownership, even though they're not here, but I just fantastic ownership, even though it's stunning that they wouldn't come to my press conference. I went through all these other, you know, other reasons, and it didn't take too far. He's like Nashville. I mean, it is something that sells itself a little bit, which the Titans, being 3-14 and with a different person in charge every year, they need the Nashville bump, but they still have to overpay because of what there are in the field.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Jared Stillman. We'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.